Hi, I'm Michael Mueller, and I'm grilling up some chicken in Tinley Park. And you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much, Michael. Enjoy that dinner. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today for show number 1009. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. The great Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN Radio studio. Hey, happy Valentine's Day. Do you have a lot of stuff planned for tonight? I don't. Jenny and I are going to be at home with our kids, ages 10 and 8. And that is Valentine's Day these days. And I was thinking about it. When's the last time we actually went out for Valentine's Day? And by the way, I'm sure that a lot of places are going to be slammed tonight. A lot of restaurants and bars. And hey, that's great. Sure seems a lot of work right now. But that's okay. If you're going out, I want you to have a real nice time. And go to a local spot. Go to your, neighborhood corner spot. Make it real cozy. I will not be doing that. I will be making it cozy just at home with the kids. Probably watching a movie. But that's okay. And I will tell you this, because I love you so much. We have a great show for you today. Steve Krakow, our pal with the Secret History of Chicago music segment. We haven't heard from him since December. Why, you may ask? We'll get into that on the show today. Also, we learn about a great local organization on the South Side that's getting kids involved in making music and much more. So don't go anywhere. I love you. I do. I really do. Because you're listening to the show. Music is such a gift, and to be able to create music is an incredible feeling. Intonation Music is an organization on the South Side of Chicago that provides youth with free music instruction and access to instruments. They're celebrating their 20th year with a move into a new 3,000 square foot Bronzeville home located at 3633 South State Street. The new location will offer a place for youth to hang out after school and on the weekends, plus a performance area and recording studio to make their own music and hold events. Tanya Howell is the executive director of Intonation Music, online at intonationmusic.org, and she is here with us today. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So this is such a great thing, I think, that's happening here in Chicago, and we should all know about it. So Intonation Music, tell us how this got started about 20 years ago now.
Yeah, just about 20 years ago, Mike Simons, who's the founder of Intonation Music, decided to bring the music class, the live band class, into parks in Chicago. And so he loaded up his car with some instruments, went to a park, formed a class, and realized that there was a high interest and a high need for music programming like that in the parks and then eventually in schools. So for the last 20 years, we've been providing music programming in schools, at park facilities, in youth centers, across the city, but in the last decade or so, really focused on the greater Bronzeville community.
So you're partnering with other organizations, you're partnering with some schools. You actually go to these places and you're providing this instruction and the access to these instruments.
That's right. So we bring our full backline of instruments to the schools that we serve. And then our instructors, who are all part-time staff and working musicians themselves, they go from site to site, from school to school, and they teach the classes there with the students at the school. We have in-school programs, we have after-school programs, we have Saturday programs at the parks. And so it's really been built up into this full-blown nonprofit that serves around 500 students every year.
That's incredible. And I know that you have some personal involvement with this because you're a parent, you're a resident of the South Side, you're a teacher. So this is very personal for you, isn't it?
Yeah, this is very personal. Actually, my own children have been Intonation students. My daughter is now 22, but she joined the band when she was 7. And she was part of the Intonation program all the way through her senior year of high school. And then my son joined in about third grade, somewhere around third grade, and was an Intonation student for a very long time. I was a teacher at a school where we partnered with Intonation. I was eventually a principal of that school as we partnered with Intonation. Then I joined the board and eventually became the executive director. So yeah, I've been around for a little while and I've seen it from many angles. So I really love what we do.
I think that's a great story. It is such a personal thing. And really, music is such a personal thing. So I think there's kind of that intersection there when we think about this art form, this entertainment, the way that it makes us feel. It's such a human connection. And so let's talk about how you're fostering that human connection through your programs. What are you offering at Intonation? So what can students get involved in? What kind of programs?
Yeah, so the music is really the hook. The students learn all the instruments in a live band. So electric guitar, bass, drums, keys, vocals. They form a band at their school or at the park. They name the band. And then most importantly, they choose the songs that they want to learn to play together. So those songs essentially become the curriculum. So they're learning songs that they love. They're learning songs that they know and that they've chosen. And then once they're with us for some time, they're building those relationships. They're working through challenges of learning something new in front of their peers, you know, and really building confidence. That's one of the main, you know, wins from our work is that our students gain confidence and build those really strong relationships.
I know you mentioned that you've been focusing on the Bronzeville community on the South Side. And you think about that neighborhood specifically in terms of our history. I mean, such rich history there, and really the South Side of Chicago. When we think about blues, we think about jazz, but also house music, gospel music. I mean, that area of the city culturally is so rich. And I know that you've been really focusing on drawing the interest of students about that Bronzeville, that South Side location. What stuff that they're interested in? What songs do they want to learn? So they, to a degree, they get to drive this thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so we definitely talk with our students about the rich history that's here in Bronzeville and emphasize the fact that they are the next, you know, musicians coming out of this neighborhood. So we chose this neighborhood intentionally, and we're really excited about building roots here by opening this new space here, bringing more attention to the South Side. There's also such a need in the schools here. So many great schools in Bronzeville and the greater Bronzeville community, elementary schools, high schools. So we get to partner with those schools even more as well.
That's really exciting. And you mentioned the new space. I mentioned it before, but this is something I know that you're really excited about. You have this new space. It's about 3,000 square feet. It's in Bronzeville at 3633 South State Street. Tell us about this. I mean, this sounds like a great, if I'm a kid, I want to go to this place. It sounds like it's going to be so much fun, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have our boring office there, so our headquarters is there as well. But as a young person, as a student, when you walk through the doors, you know, you are welcomed into our lounge area for the students. We have a fully built out recording and production studio in the works. We'll have our classroom there where the students learn to play music together, a stage where they can perform for their peers, for their families, for the community. So it's just going to be a real creative hub and a place to be for our students throughout the week and on the weekends.
So not only is it a place where students can learn music and make music, but this is another gathering space. This is another community space. And look, you know, when we see, you know, you look at Chicago and what's going up in a lot of these areas. Well, maybe that we put a bank up here and another bank up over there. Doesn't really do much for the community, but this is a place where people can go hang out, learn from each other, just have fun. And so I think that kind of gathering community aspect, that really, to me, I just get excited thinking about that. I feel like the youth and really everybody in that community is going to be excited for this.
Most definitely. Yeah, we're excited to welcome in our current Intonation students, future Intonation students. We also have lots of connections in our community with local artists, from musicians to folks doing fine art to just community organizers who will be able to use the space to gather to continue to be creative, just to, you know, bounce ideas off of each other and to learn from each other. So we're excited to invite in our peers, other orgs like us who are doing great work in the community. So, I mean, the sky is the limit, and we're just so excited that this moment right now is really our moment after 20 years of being in arts partner in residence with the parks and being in borrowed space, essentially. We finally get to call something our own and have a home in Bronzeville. So we're so excited for our students, for the next generation of students, and for our entire community, really.
That is really exciting. And I just want to ask you here, Tanya, the impact of what you do at Intonation Music. You said that your kids, your own kids, went through this program, which I think is cool. But let's talk about the impact here. How do you see kids grow and really blossom when they go through your programming at Intonation?
I mentioned confidence, and that is something that, you know, you can really see with your own eyes. When you see students join us for the first time, they often come in shy, they're a bit reserved, maybe even a bit introverted. And after some time with us, they really come out of their shell. They, you know, you can see just the light in their eyes and their comfort on stage. One of our students mentioned recently that the first time he performed at one of our showcases, he was nervous and had the jitters and really didn't know like where he fit in. And now after doing this for 5 years, he was like, oh yeah, this is what I do. This is it. Like, this is me. And so that level of confidence is huge, you know?
Yeah, that is incredible. Well, you're doing really wonderful work at Intonation Music, and this new space, this is going to be open in a few months. Is that the goal?
You know what? We're having our ribbon cutting ceremony on March 7th. It's not that far away. So we're planning and we're really getting ready for that. And then we'll be fully functioning in the summer. So yeah, I would say we'll start our programs there in a few months, but we'll have that ribbon cutting where we can open the doors for our community, welcome everybody in so they can kind of see what we've been up to for the last couple of years in preparation for this big move. So March 7th, that's really our big opening day.
There we go. We can check out the website, intonationmusic.org. That's the website for Intonation Music, based in Bronzeville, doing fantastic work, offering music instruction, access to instruments for youth. This is so cool. I get so excited, especially with music. I love music so much. And to be able to share this gift and inspire others, I think is such a profound thing that's happening here in Chicago. And we should all know about it. Tanya Howell, the executive director of Intonation Music. Tanya, thanks so much for talking to us today. Good luck with the grand opening, I guess, coming up in a few weeks here. And this is really exciting stuff.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Chicago's West Side has a long history of community leadership and grassroots power, and that legacy continues today. Ramel Terry is a West Side native and longtime community leader who has just been named president of the NAACP Chicago's West Side branch. She's the first woman to lead the branch in nearly 20 years. So what does this new chapter of leadership mean for the NAACP's West Side branch, and what's next for Black communities on Chicago's West Side? With us to answer these questions and more is Ramel Terry. Ramel, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. So this is a pretty big deal because the NAACP is the oldest and largest civil rights organization. It was founded February of 1909, so it has such an incredible history. So what the NAACP West Side branch is doing here in Chicago, can you just explain to us what some of the programs are and what you're doing with this organization?
Yes. So I will say there's a lot happening with the Chicago West Side branch NAACP. I've had the fortunate pleasure prior to ascending to the role of president of being engaged for the past 16 plus years. And so some of the efforts that we're currently undertaking, as you know, we're currently in the March primary election season. And so we've been hosting various candidate forums. We've hosted the 8th District, the 7th Congressional District, which, you know, is pretty historical. As longstanding Congressman Danny K. Davis is not seeking re-election. So that's a big seat that's being filled currently. We recently had the Cook County Board President Candidate Forum. So we really try to make sure that our community is civically engaged and civically informed and making sure we do our best to bring the candidates who are vying for them for their votes to them in their communities. We're also working a lot around education, having conversation with the various leaderships, whether it's with CPS or with city colleges, and even some of our local universities about how we ensure that Black people are being equitably represented and, you know, receiving the necessary resources to be successful.
There's a lot going on. And, you know, I think the west side of Chicago, I mean, we've talked about it kind of here, that there's a lot of history. And there's a lot of just history in terms of that community power. And like I said before, grassroots organizing. So to think about what is going on currently on the west side of Chicago, can you talk to us about some of the challenges that this area, which is predominantly people of color, what are some of the challenges that you're thinking about right now as you take the reins as president?
Yeah, I think we're thinking about the social determinants of health, right? Black people, unfortunately, are significantly impacted by health challenges. We also are seen across the board as not being properly serviced when it comes to those challenges in the health industry. So we're really taking a close look at what can we do, how can we better advocate, and how can we have conversations with the elected officials that oversee our hospitals and such to ensure that we're being serviced to the best of our ability. We're doing a lot around housing. As you know, in recent years, we've experienced flooding, right? And then we also most recently have been significantly impacted by an increase in property taxes.
And the history of the west side of Chicago, I mean, there is a lot of disinvestment. And the narrative around the neighborhoods on the west side isn't always positive. And I think what gets headlines isn't always reflective of what's going on in the community. So in terms of thinking about what you want people to know about the west side of Chicago, I think you talking about the level of engagement, I think that's something we honestly don't hear about. Maybe we hear about this in other neighborhoods or other areas of the city. But, you know, I think that what's coming across for me is that, look, people are involved. They want to talk to people in power. They want to organize and make their own power to be able to influence what's going on in their communities. What do you want all of us to know and understand about the west side of Chicago?
I like the way you asked that question, and I would agree, right? Like, as someone who served in this with this organization for the past 16 plus years, it's all in a volunteer capacity. Even as the president of this great institution, I'm still serving in a volunteer capacity. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of committed people from the West Side who have been committed to this work for decades. And that's really important. I believe, unfortunately, most people from a media perspective aren't necessarily as interested. It's not always sexy when you're doing the work to save yourself. Right. And so I really do appreciate this opportunity to have this conversation. But we have a really strong branch of committed individuals who want to see better for the collective Black community. And so they give their free time doing a myriad of things, whether that's answering phone calls, whether that's helping to host events, whether that's also leveraging different relationships that they may have with other organizations or elected officials, showing up in different capacities. It's really important to know that there are people who genuinely care, and we're willing to do this job, whether someone is paying for us to do so or not, because we understand that we are the change that we've been waiting to see.
Sometimes change is slow, and that can be frustrating. Sometimes progress is slow. So I want to ask you this. What is progress for you now in this new position, the president, new for you, I should say, president of the NAACP Chicago's West Side branch? But what is progress for you in this work?
Yeah, progress for me looks like ushering in a new generation of leaders. When the former president, Carl Brinson, stepped down recently, it was a really big deal. many people had questions like, is everything okay? And it was like, yes, everything is well. He understood the importance of choosing a successor. I was his protege. I've been around this organization for a while. He taught me a lot, and I feel very humbled for this opportunity. And I also feel a sense of responsibility of doing the same. And that's what I'm most excited about. We have a lot of young people who are out here, who are doing the work, who are, again, not necessarily receiving the accolades, but understand the importance of their responsibility to our collective community. And I want to make sure that I'm making a pathway for them to step into this position one day and be able to usher in the next level of leaders and continue that process so that we don't drop the ball on this, because we have a responsibility that as our elders or whomever go on to whatever their next phase of life is calling for them to do, that there's someone always ensuring that we are getting our just deserve. And that's all that I can really ask for at this point.
I'm glad you brought up the next generation, because I think that's just so important to be able to pass along what we have all learned and to hopefully have the next generation care and be engaged. And that's something that you are focused on, I know. And that youth aspect, let's just briefly talk about that, to get youth involved and to step up and to participate. And sure, like, we can get out in the streets and make our voices heard. That's really important. But I always say the toughest part of like a rally or a protest is the next day. It's the work. It's what do you do from that point? So how are you getting the youth involved on the west side of Chicago?
Yeah. So outside of some of our traditional means, as the NAACP via either our youth council or our AXO program, another way our particular branch is doing that, we have established what we call youth ambassadors, which are young people between the ages of 16 and even upwards into 26, where we're working directly with them and connecting them with our various committees. As I pointed out earlier, we have a committee for essentially everything. So whether it's political action, health, environmental justice, education, veteran affairs, we are partnering them with those committees so that they, one, can learn about what those responsibilities are and then start to help partner on those different types of initiatives that will be beneficial to the community. So giving them a sense of responsibility, right, and making them take ownership of some of this work is what allows them to understand their role and then be connected to it and understand, like, oh, this isn't something that people are just doing over there and see themselves apart from it, but they're intimately engaged in that work and learning and becoming leaders themselves. And they have the ability then, once they have the knowledge, to go and communicate and educate their peers and bring them into the fold. So that's some of the ways in which we're engaging our young people into the work.
Ramel, you are the first woman to lead this branch, the West Side branch of the NAACP, in nearly 20 years. We talked a little bit about the history. You said that, you know, you're standing on the shoulders of greats, but as the first woman in decades to lead this organization on the West Side of Chicago, what does that mean to you?
As I said, it's truly humbling to have such an opportunity, because when it comes to this work, it's really about the business of people. It's also about the business of politics and government. And I'm just grateful that I've been able to demonstrate the level of consistency, authenticity, commitment, and passion to lead this work, and that I've been entrusted with this responsibility, and that I also not only have the support of the past president, but my current executive officers, committee members. I've been having meetings since I've taken leadership, and people are really like, I really want to recommit. I really want to work well and do well under your leadership. And so that really makes me excited about what's before me, because when I accepted this position, I made it very clear to our members that my failures are your failures, because I can't do this work alone, which means that my successes will be our successes. And that's just really important for me to do this work well, but not lose sight of why we do this work. And it really is because of the collective economic vitality of the Black people in the city of Chicago.
And the work continues. I know you are in the thick of that work, and it's very exciting to hear this commitment, how excited the people are who work with the NAACP on the West Side. It's I think it's exciting. There's a lot to be hopeful about here. And I think especially today, you know, we'll take all the good news that we can get. And Ramel Terry is the new president of the NAACP Chicago's West Side branch. Ramel, it was so great talking to you today. Really, best of luck with all of this important work that you're doing, and let's be in touch.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
But most of all, I thank you for saving me.
Yeah, once again, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of Steve Krakow, who is the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader online, also at chicagoreader.com. And Steve, it's been a minute since we've talked. It's nice to talk to you again. How are you?
Hello. Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So
the hey, it's the, like, you know, 40 degrees this week or something.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know, let's not complain, right?
No, we're not complaining. We are going to talk about some of the little changes that have gone on at the Reader. We'll talk about that in a minute because you haven't been here in a minute. So let's get down to business here because we're talking about two artists in this segment of The Secret History of Chicago Music here on the old program. And the first person we're talking about, Elsa Harris, who is an amazing vocalist. And I did not know about Elsa Harris before I read your column about her, Steve. But this is an example of someone who's incredibly talented. She's born in Chicago in February of 1947. And she is going to end up just playing with some powerhouses. Tell us the origin story here, because she's a great vocalist.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, you know, like I always say, I always learn something, you know, writing these and researching these as well. And, you know, I just, you know, looked deep at album credits and I saw her name on, she's on the classic Minnie Riperton album Come Into My Garden. She's doing some of these background vocals on a song Les Fleurs that is amazing, amazing song. And long story short, I was surprised she went on to have this whole incredible gospel music career, and she's basically one of the absolute leading lights in that field.
She is, and she is just naturally gifted. She begins playing organ in church by age 12, and she's, you know, kind of improvising this boogie-woogie style piano, anything else she could play. And she becomes a really sort of important figure in the gospel scene, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, it's funny because she, you know, she was sort of classically trained and then on her own sort of sneak and do, you know, sort of boogie-woogie stuff. And you know, the church she went to was actually very austere and did hymns and all that, you know, where her adopted mother took her. And then she sort of walked around the corner and saw, like, the power of, like, real gospel music and people singing and someone playing organ. And that just, like, basically sounds like it blew her doors off. Just the energy, the, you know, that people were sort of improvising, you know, that even, that, you know, they weren't these sort of set things. They're feeling the music, and, you know, someone could just throw out a hymn and the person had to be able to play it on piano. And I think that really, I got to interview her, give her a call. She's 79, sharp as a tack, telling me great stories galore. And she, hardworking lady her whole life, you know, been giving her all to the music, like, since the beginning.
Yeah. And she is, boy, she does so much. She is going to start recording. She is, man, she's auditioning. She gets a gig at 17 for a choir, and she's going to take the lead vocals on this track, I Thank God.
Yeah. That led to this whole, like, you know, she just started singing in the, you know, vocal choirs. And then, you know, she ended up basically forming being one of the singers in this, the Jesse Dixon Singers, who I did not realize were as famous and did so much crazy stuff as they did. That was like a real learning experience for me.
Well, she's going to go on tour with the Jesse Dixon Singers with Paul Simon.
So that's just crazy. Okay, so they, yeah. This is where, again, I'm learning a lot. Like, so they're like the first gospel group to play, was it Newport Jazz Fest? And there, I didn't even realize there's multiple shows that they have around it. And they played some 8 a.m. in the morning show. And there was like a buzz on them as like, as a gospel group. They had records out, stuff like that. So like Paul Simon showed up, Bette Midler showed up. I think Della Reese showed up. This crazy cast of people at like 8 in the morning to see them. And I guess Paul had just broken up with Garfunkel and was sort of looking for his new direction, saw them and was like, hey, why don't you be my backing band and you guys like do an opening set? And then they play with them for like 8 years.
That's amazing, man. What a story.
She had stories galore. I could not include them all, of like playing in Japan, you know, playing everywhere from like Cabrini Green to Japan, you know, basically.
Yeah, Royal Albert Hall,
like, you know, and everything in between. And just, you know, her sort of interesting musings on how there was secular music going on. You had Paul Simon, who was a Jewish guy. You had gospel music going on. It was a really interesting, and yet it sort of all went down great, you know, no matter where they played and what the, you know, sort of religious or whatever the makeup of, you know, the crowd, it obviously lasted. There's a live album just called Rhyme and Simon. I actually saw at the record store the other day that, yeah, they're like, you know, the full on backing band. And sometimes Jesse Dixon would sing some of the numbers that old Art sang as well. So like that was their, and if you think about those songs of that era, like Mother and Child Reunion, Love Me Like a Rock, and those songs, they do have this very sort of like gospel, you know, flavor to them. That's right. Sort of like the direction that white boy Jew, I'm allowed to say that because I'm as well, Simon went in, you know? So there you go.
So this is amazing. So Elsa Harris, she's 79. She is still, like you say, sharp as a tack and doing her thing. So we could see on ChicagoReader.com the profile that you did of Elsa Harris. I do want to sneak this in here, and then we'll talk briefly about what's up with the reader right now, as much as we know. But you have another Secret History column up. This is another local musician, because that's where you kind of live. This guy, Duke Tomato. He's a guitar player. Duke Tomato. It's spelled T-U-M-A-T-O-E.
The wind be howling, my legs be cold, my pants be threadbare, yeah, they're too damn old.
It, it's a name that catches your attention. It caught mine, you know, when I saw that he was still playing. And I'm like, wow, what's the story with this crazy old guy? And I was like, boom, whoa, he's got a crazy story. His name caught the attention of a Mr. John Fogerty.
Right, he went on tour with Fogerty.
Yeah, that's, you know, sort of like I figured out his sort of like big claim to fame, you know, was that, yes, you know, by the time the 80s rolled around, John Fogerty was like, I don't know, he was like bumming around the Midwest or something at one point and just heard the name on the radio and thought it was maybe like a wacky young new wave band. But somebody told him, no, this guy's like a great bar rocker, got stories, veteran guitar player, yada, yada. He went and saw him, was totally blown away, was like, I'm going to record you. And yeah, he recorded a live album and they toured together.
So Duke Tomato is born on the south side of Chicago in 1947 as well. I think Elsa Harris was also born in 1947. So that was quite
same
the year.
My pop as my pop as well.
There we go. And Duke Tomato, his real name is William Severin Fiorio. So he's still kicking. You talk to him and, you know, he was playing blues. He's playing rock and he's going to be playing with some members of what will become REO Speedwagon. That's a really crazy story, too. So we don't have time to get into like the foundations of REO. But
it's a complicated genesis. But yes, he was the third guitar player and supposedly the one who sort of got them going on the track. But wanted to start his own bluesier band.
And so what's he up to these days? Because he just played Kingston Mines, didn't he?
He's still gigging hard. And, you know, like he still has that sort of B.B. King-ish bluesy sound. And he's still, he used to play like 200 gigs a year. He doesn't do that anymore. But check your listings. He's still out there if you want to see a legend. And, you know, I should add, you know, with his name, not afraid to get a little goofy with his songs, too.
That's right. And if you read this strip, you know that he's done stuff. He's lived a life, maybe a few lives, and he's still here to tell the tale. So, Steve, before I let you go here, briefly, the reader has gone through some changes. As you know, it has over, I guess, how many years now? We've seen some different iterations of the reader. So it's a bigger print, kind of hearkening back to what it used to look like, a bigger print publication now, but it's only in print once a month. But the website, chicagoreader.com, is going to get updated frequently. That's why we haven't talked to you in a while, because there was a little bit of a transition.
There's been a bit of a transition going on, and the Duke Tomato feature is in the print edition, so probably every print edition will have a secret history in it, but there'll be one a month. Sounds like they're going to be sort of restocking it at the places that you can pick it up, and you know they kind of want to keep a sort of definitive thicker, you know, edition going back to the old days, in a bit more of a magazine format. From what I've seen, I've still not actually held this beauty in my hands yet. I gotta go scouting around for it, but that's the thing, is it will be available throughout the whole month, and then yeah, they will be updating, you know, show previews and content like that on the site every week, like they, you know, did in the past. And there'll still be two secret histories a month. Just one will be online only.
There it is. I think I figured that out. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
You know, I mean, I think they're figuring out some new things with the format as they go along, you know. But yeah, like you said, it was four sections. It was down to three. It went to a oversized weekly. It went, you know, it's gone through permutations over the years. I've seen quite a few editors and owners come and go. And, you know, the reader's been going since 1971. I think always curious to see where it's going to go.
We love the reader.
As long as it is going.
That's right. We love the reader and love the secret history of Chicago music column. It is authored by local musician, music historian, and artist Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave. We got the story of Duke Tomato. We got the story of Elsa Harris. It was an action-packed secret history of Chicago music this time. Steve Krakow, thank you so much, man. And you keep doing your thing.
And go find that print edition, people.
Keep it up, babe. I'm going to throw a fit. You better be. Lord, I'm warning you. Hey, if you keep on clowning, I'm going to wear you on the shoe. Oh, night and night,
and that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 1009 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio. Enjoy Valentine's Day. I love you for listening to this show. And I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.